What am I supposed to say after that? That was so special. It was very, very, what special music. So thank you very much for that. I look forward to more. And I'm looking forward, there's a couple other family members, maybe three other family members that might soon join this little ensemble. Very nice to have that today. It was blended so beautifully. It was very nice. So we look forward to having special music for years to come. After I'm no longer here, we'll still have. And now for special music. Sophie, whatever your last name will be when then 20, 30 years from now. Very, very nice. All right. We are continuing a series of sermons this week. This is part two. There's going to be four. So if you're a visitor, you missed last week, or you won't be here next week, or you won't be here on Feast of Trumpets, I don't know what to say. You know what I'll say? Read the book. Everything I'm going to talk about is in the book anyway, so. And someone said, what book? Are you kidding me? What book? You know what book? This is from the Bible. This is Bible prophecy. So we are today going to continue to look at what trends, what specific events we can expect to happen. Things we're looking for based on Bible prophecy to happen between now and the time everything really begins to start. The time when the church will be taken to a place of safety. And the beginning of the Great Tribulation. Now, I've got a lot of material to cover, and I went 8 minutes overtime in Indianapolis. I might go 10 over because I add a little bit more, so I'm sorry about that. Also, before I get into the sermon, I made this clarification last week as well, but I want to make a statement that everything I say about national or world conditions are going to be personal observations on my part as I see things now. So that's, you know, you have to make a call. What's going on in the world? What can I expect to see in the world? I base it on the Bible prophecy, but some of this will be personal observation. So this is a series of sermons about how prophetic events are currently playing out. It could change, but this is the way that things are currently playing out, how they might come together in the future. Again, none of what I say to you is meant in any way to be controversial, political at all. That's all aside. They're simply observations about what I see, about the direction our nation is going, about the direction the world is currently headed, and then where the church may be headed in the years ahead. Our world is changing at a rate that's hard to imagine. And we think back over the past 5 to 15 years or so. The United States is really not what it was a few years ago. Things have changed that much. For example, we have become a nation more conditioned to, shall I say, unchallenged compliance because of something we began to experience 4.5 years ago now. And we all know what that was. We all went through it. It was called COVID. And we did things that we didn't think we would do, and we became conditioned to that. Now, COVID was bad for our country, but whatever happened, and there's controversy about what caused it, but whatever happened to cause it, you can know that it was under the guidance and the direction of the enemy of mankind. It was under the guidance and direction of Satan the devil, the god of this world. He has used deadly diseases. He did, he will again in his attacks on humanity. He is continuing all of his efforts, and he has a lot of weapons in his arsenal, to bring about his, against Satan the devil, his number one goal, and that is the annihilation of all life on this planet. He is very good. He's very clever in his tactics and his deception. So much so, he has convinced the world that his evil is really good, and good is evil. That's brought out in Isaiah 5, verse 20, by the way. So he sets things up so that those who would oppose all the good, quote unquote, that the world governments are doing, well, they must be the bad guys. They must be the evil ones, and evil people should be, let's use the word, marginalized. And the world has seen a lot of that in the past, let's say, 100 years, thinking back to World War I, World War II, there's been a lot of genocide occurring. We think of the Holocaust, but there's been others as well. And Satan has not changed his strategy. Rather, he disguises it. And we're going to see that intensify as we get into the last of the last days. Now, something else has been going on as well. Again, I'm going back a little bit so we can see the projection of where things may be going. A few years ago, there was a worldwide movement that started, well, it restarted, kind of, under a very commonly known name. A lot of commentators talked about it. It was called the Great Reset. And that was basically an effort to revive the concept of a new world order. We used to hear that term years ago. Also heard the term one world government. So the idea subsequently gained momentum with more followers all around the world because that was made to look like something that was good. Some believe it would continue to transform the nations, also including the United States, into nations that are under the subjection and control of, you've heard the term, the global elites. But whatever name, whatever method, their goal, once again, is control, controlling the wealth, the power of the world. But again, who controls the wealth and the power of the world now? Who is the God of this world? We have to always keep that in mind. Governments are using the tools and the guidance of Satan the devil who rules the world now, and they have no idea that they are under that evil influence. They would deny that Satan even exists. So they're being fooled as well because Satan has no intention of simply having a one-world government. That is not his goal. His goal is far greater, and I mentioned it already. He wants all human life destroyed. And he is using every tactic, including whatever we see going around in the world today with the political elites, whatever system he can. He wants to further his plan, primarily leading toward World War III. And you've heard that term used in the past year. But I think it's critical that we're aware of what's going on in the world around us and why it's happening. I used the term of compliance. So the idea then is to comply with our new directives, and if you don't comply, then you must be a threat. And you are threatened. Once again, all made to sound really good, really acceptable, because after all, we know what's best. We're in control. So I think you've seen many of these things actually accelerating over the past years. And unless there's a dramatic and unexpected reversal, proponents of various fundamental changes are going to continue their work of transforming Western nations into places where citizens have, sometimes even willingly, surrendered their personal freedoms in the name of doing what's best, submitting to the governments who are promising them everything. We'll take care of you. Everything for nothing on your part. And they don't care if it takes years. It's a long-term plan. The globalists have that long-term goal of being at the top of their one-world government. Now, I believe that is Satan's attempt to counterfeit what God is actually planning, a very different type of a one-world government. Now, we've seen major steps toward this in 2024, and most people have no idea what's happening or why. Satan uses greed. He uses laziness to condition millions of people into living on what they can get. Why do I have to work? You know, we're told, Paul tells us, if you don't work, you don't eat. But though what can I get? What can you give to me? And so today, some people are refusing to work. Instead, support the source of their entitlement culture. You've heard that word bandied about, which is the government. And they just want free stuff. Keep on pouring it in. And that's been the norm in many countries. We have nations who that's their way of life. I'm thinking of Scandinavia, for example. But we've seen it here in the United States in more recent years. Again, not trying to be political here whatsoever. This is so much more than one political party over another. This is a worldwide effort with virtually unfunded or unlimited funding from multi-billionaires. Think of big tech. Think of big pharma. Think of that desire, once again, for one world government. But I want that only if I'm in charge. The powerful people behind the concept of this are not going to allow their efforts to be overturned by some future election this year or 4 years or 8 years or 20 years from now or anywhere else. And I think we've seen that. It doesn't matter. I believe Satan is using this and this confusion where we are, even as a country today, he's using these things to bring the world into a time of chaos, confusion, contention, strife, so much so you've even heard the word civil war mentioned in our country. But certainly eventually, as I mentioned before, he wants to bring us to world war. That's Satan's plan. Again, this movement has risen at a faster pace recently, which gives us the more reason to believe that prophetic events may be speeding up, may be leading towards, finally, the Great Tribulation. So again, given this introduction, I want to look deeper into specifically what I think we can expect to see happening over the next few months and years. I have several points. Number one, the increasing rise of foreigners among us. I want to go to Deuteronomy 28. I want to begin, though, by pointing out that this country was built on immigration. You know, I wouldn't be here had it not been for people who immigrated to the United States, most of us the same way. So we should embrace, we should welcome people from other nations and other cultures. They can enrich our lives tremendously. I think of my very, very dear friends in the Raleigh congregation who are from what is now Myanmar and how much they've enriched my life personally. And certainly the congregation there in the Raleigh, North Carolina area. So, but there's a right way and there's a wrong way. If it's uncontrolled illegal immigration can be detrimental to a country, especially true when there's no attempt at assimilation at all. We heard this recently in the news, into the life of their new country. But I want to read Deuteronomy 28, verse 43, and then we're going to go to Lamentations. Just one verse here, Deuteronomy 28, 43, the alien who is among you shall rise higher and higher above you, and you shall come down lower and lower. This is, again, a prophecy about what will happen for those who refuse to keep the laws of God. Now, Lamentations, that's in the middle of the major prophets. Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentations, Ezekiel, I think it is, chapter 5, and just two verses here, verse 1 and 2 of Lamentations 5. I'll have it read before you get there, I bet. So, remember, O Lord, what has come upon us. Look, and behold our reproach. Our inheritance has been turned over to aliens and our houses to foreigners. And again, we think of the things we've seen on the news recently taking place out in Aurora, Colorado, where this housing was taken over by, I forget where they were from, Venezuela, I think, but it doesn't matter. Illegal immigration has become a very huge issue in our country. It's been a crisis, though, in other parts of the world as well, especially in Europe, especially in South America. You hear talk about it all the time, though, in our country, because that's what you hear on the news. We've continually seen videos of these border crossings and showing that our borders are not secure. And right now, there's no intent, appears, to make them so, despite political promises. It's a very complicated situation. But according to the prophecy, again, I just read that we should expect to see a continued rise of illegal immigration in modern Israelite Western nations. Now, regretfully, we've seen that many illegal immigrants are not vetted. They're not screened. They're not turned away. And they've been coming into our country at will. And then, being generous, we want to take care of them. We don't want to be cruel or anything. So they do receive handouts, tickets to various locations around the United States. And most recently in the news, something that's not too far from us. We've been hearing what's going on up in Springfield in regards to the, now you pick a number, 15,000 to 32,000. I've heard all of them, but regardless, a lot of Haitian immigrants coming in. And we have no idea really who is coming into our country and what some may be wanting to do. And so we wonder why this is happening. We wonder if it will change. When will it change? prophecy indicates that this problem is not going to get better. It's going to get worse. Now, another thing we can look for, I don't have these numbered. You can number them if you want to, but I'll let you know when I'm changing topics. We should look for the Arab Confederation to increase. An Arab Confederation to increase. There's something called a caliphate. It's a grouping together of Arab nations under basically one head, and it's known as a caliphate. And various groups are involved in this, and we've heard offshoot groups. They're basically known as terrorist groups. So we think of ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis, Al-Qaeda, the Taliban. But people of that persuasion believe they need to unite. It's difficult for them to unite. What would do that? But they want to establish a caliphate that enforces their interpretation of Islamic or Sharia law. Now, that puts these terrorist groups in conflict with some of the present governments that are ruling in these Islamic countries. That lack, they don't want this lack of a strict enforcement of Islamic law. They want it to be very, very strict, very severe. We've seen that change most recently and tragically in Afghanistan. It's been a very terrible situation over there. The Taliban, other radical Islamic regimes are committed to world domination of Islam. They're looking. They want to spread chaos and confusion because they're looking for the rise of a person they call the 12th Imam and will only come during a period of great turmoil and crisis in the country. And that great Imam will solve the world's problems. That's what they're looking for. And they're being radicalized like this to bring that about. So they think they're doing a good thing. Now, again, they are committed to world domination of Islam. I have a quote here from The Atlantic magazine. His name is Graham Wood. This was on Salon.com, dated 11/18/15. So it's a little bit old. It says that the armies of Rome will mass to meet the armies of Islam in northern Syria, and that Islam's final showdown with an anti-Messiah will occur in Jerusalem after a period of renewed Islamic conquest. So ISIS believes it has a mission of preparing the region for this coming, let's call it an apocalyptic bloodbath. Again, that's what they want to do. That's how they think that their imam will appear. Now, ISIS did suffer severe losses under Mr. President Trump's administration. He would claim they were totally eliminated. Apparently, they were not. Remnants are emerging, absent a U.S. presence in the region. So again, why is all that significant to us? Because it is part of Bible prophecy. Let's look at that. It's actually in the Psalms, a place we wouldn't think of Bible prophecy, but it's in Psalm 83. Psalm 83, verse 4 through 6, I think. So it's kind of breaking into the thought here, but it says, speaking of these Arab nations, it says, they have said, come and let us make them or cut them off from being a nation, talking about Israel, really, that the name of Israel may be remembered no more. Then it goes on in verse 6 to say, they, now the Arab or the Palestinian or whatever you want to call it, they've consulted together with one consent. Something brings them together with one consent. What will that be? It's not there right now. But something will happen, and so they consult together with one consent, and they form a confederacy against you. And then it mentions a bunch of the nations, Edom, Ishmaelites, Moab, Hagarites, Gebel, Ammon, and Amalek. Okay, so this is a little confusing. So rather than me try to explain it all, it's a very good explanation of all this is in Life, Hope, and Truth, where you will find many explanations, by the way. So about this caliphate that's coming and the Psalm 83 prophecy, Life, Hope, and Truth, I don't have the name of the article, but you can find it. Just look up King of the North. As we come to the time of the end, spoken of in Daniel 11, verse 40, something is apparently, we don't know what it is yet, but something is going to bring the Arab world together as a confederacy against Israel or allow a powerful Arab nation to emerge in order to fulfill the prophecy that the king of the south will fight against the king of the north. Again, that's in Daniel 11. The king of the south, it says, will push at the king of the north. Perhaps this clash between two powers will occur over the treatment of the Muslims. Perhaps it will be a clash over oil, probably, or some other economic disagreement. While the Bible does not give us the reason for the fighting or provide specific identity of the king of the south, the ancient nations that were mentioned here, like Edom, Moab, and Egypt, are all specifically mentioned in this prophecy. The king of the north, which will likely be a revival of the Roman Empire, we'll get into that in the next sermon, the king of the north, a revival of the Roman Empire, will successfully counterattack the king of the south. Again, Daniel 11, verses 41 through 43, indicates that in this process, he, the king of the north, he will enter the glorious land. The glorious land, what could that be? That's the Holy Land. That's the Middle East. That's Israel. And he, the king of the north, will gain control over the region. That's extremely important. And a lot of events will take place when this is going on. So at some point in the future, we can expect to see a confederation of Arab countries uniting, and something will cause them to initiate a strike, a push, an attack on Europe. Will Europe have been united yet? Perhaps not. Maybe so. But whatever happens, it will cause a swift and an overwhelming response that to the rest of the world will appear, this is great. The Europe has finally done what no other nations or group of nations would do. They have finally put an end to the terrorism of the Middle East, of that, you know, these Islamic terrorists, to use that term. So the caliphate, or the king of the south, is going to find themselves totally defeated. Now, that's going to be met with approval in the majority of the Western world. I suspect there will be great celebrations, and it'll say, hey, radical Islam, it's all been defeated. The terrorism is over. Well, if we see that, we have to be aware of what's happening. Things are really getting close. It is at the time of the end. So if that happens, then we wonder, because we think, well, what do we think when we think of Arabs, the Saudi Arabia, the different nations? We think of oil. So who would control Arabian oil fields? Who would control oil production, oil transportation? It's not, most likely, it's not going to be the United States. So who? So related to all this is our next point, to continue to look for signs of the rise in Europe, a reunification in Europe. We'll go to Revelation chapter 13. Revelation 13, verse 1. This is going to be the vision of the beast. Now, again, we're going to get into a lot more of this next week in the next sermon, part 3. But Revelation 13, verse 1. This is John in vision. I stood on the sand of the sea. I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and on his horns 10 crowns, and on his head a blasphemous name. Scoot over to chapter 17. And verse 12, here's the interpretation of the vision. Revelation 17 now, verse 12. The 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings who have received no kingdom as of yet, but they receive authority for 1 hour, a short time, for 1 hour as kings with the beast. That's 1 hour, it could be a month, a year, but a short time. 1 hour is symbolic of a very short time as kings with the beast. And these all are of one mind, and these, the nations, they will give all their power and authority to the beast. One, probably, person who is as a leader of these 10 nations. So think back in history to the original Roman Empire. Again, we'll get into this a little later. It was overrun. It came to an end in the year AD 476. The 10 horns representing 10 restorations of this empire were predicted to occur. The most recent of these revivals was the Empire Italy, was at the head of it, 1870 to 1945. We think of 1945, Mussolini, Hitler, and so forth. And that was the ninth. There have been 9 revivals of the Roman Empire. The final one is yet to appear. It's due to appear on the scene. Daniel chapter 2. Daniel 2. By the way, I am planning to prepare some charts and graphs and so forth to help I'll be sending that out this week prior to the third sermon. So you can follow along on some of these, because I know it's easy to get lost. Daniel 2, verse 40. So you had the statue with the head of gold, Nebuchadnezzar, all the way down to the feet of iron. You had the Greek, Greco-Macedonian, the Persian Empire. Okay, Daniel 2, verse 40. The fourth kingdom, though, shall be as strong as iron, inasmuch as iron breaks in pieces and shatters everything, and like iron that crushes, that kingdom will break in pieces and crush all the others. Whereas you saw the feet and toes, partly of potter's clay, partly of iron, the kingdom shall be divided. Yet the strength of the iron shall be in it, just as you saw the iron mixed with ceramic clay. And as the toes of the feet were partly iron and partly clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong, but partly fragile. And as you saw iron mixed with ceramic clay, they will mingle with the seed of men. But they will not adhere to one another, because iron does not mix with clay. Okay, so it's a federation, it's a grouping, but it's very hard to keep them together. And in the days, though, of these kings, something happens. The God of heaven sets up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. So that shows you the time setting. This is the last of the kingdoms of men. So today, it appears that this final revival of the Roman Empire is going to emerge from nations who are currently in the European Union. I remember being a kid, and it was such big news when the very first grouping of the European nations, the European Union. Oh, it must be the time of the end. The nations are getting together. There's 10. Are there 10 nations yet? No, not yet. But once there's 10, then it's time. And that was like 50 years ago, whatever, so. So there's 20-some nations, but somehow, some way, there will be a grouping identified as 10. We'll wait and see how that is. But it appears continued economic and political pressures are going to make it imperative that these nations that are divided now will seek unity. Now, there was a lot of problems going on in Europe, especially 4 to 5 years ago. COVID had and the lockdowns had a devastating effect, not only in our country, but certainly on the European countries as well. Their economies faced various challenges. So they're in a rebuilding process for that. Then we have on the scene what's happened in Russia. Russia's been involved. You talk about military aggression. It's been over 2 years now. There's been a tremendous loss of life in the Ukraine-Russia war. And then you've got China on the other side, continuing to threaten aggression. They fly their jets over Taiwan. They sail their warships in the China Sea. And all that's going on. And Europe is watching all of that. What shall we do? At the same time, looking towards the United States is being currently perceived as not a strong nation right now, a little bit weak on the world stage, unwilling to play the role of the world policeman, the world protector that much of the world came to think that was normal back after World War II. And then what happened in Afghanistan, and Europe saw that, the defeat, the embarrassment for the United States. So could NATO, can they now really look to the United States for protection against their enemies, against Russia or other enemies? Would they find protection from Russia's interference, from a potential invasion of the Eastern European nations? American influence has greatly diminished in the region. So at this point, they're looking. Our current president, not many months left in his term. And so he's perceived as not being really on the job. He's perceived as an old man. He's perceived as weak, who is unable or unwilling to lead. What's that looking like in the eyes of the rest of the world, particularly in Europe? Maybe they're frightened. Many have warned that we are, at this time, really between now and the next 4 or 5 months, we are in a very dangerous situation, a very dangerous time period during these next few months. I want to quote from a Congressional Commission on the National Defense Strategy that came just recently prepared for Congress, and they wrote this summary, quote, "The United States faces the most serious and the most challenging threats since 1945, including the potential for a near-term major war. It also found that China and Russia are major powers who are seeking to undermine the United States, and that the United States military lacks both the capability and the capacity required to be confident that it can deter and prevail in combat. This was a long report. That was just the essence of it. So what crisis might occur? And we're expecting something. What crisis might occur that will convince Europe we've got to take matters into our own hands for our own economic protection, our own military protection? Again, I believe something will happen soon to strengthen Europe quickly so that they would be ready for an upcoming unexpected attack from the South, the King of the South. So we've already seen now that Europe, some way this united Europe, will be able to mount a successful, a highly successful response to a major attack from the King of the South, the Arab nations. Now, how will they come to the point where they are willing and able to launch such a successful counterattack? How fast can that happen? We don't really know. But if we see the United States continuing to weaken, then Europe would strengthen quickly because something's going to happen to fill a power vacuum. It seems like Europe is ready to fill that power vacuum. Now, they have very few options left, Europe does, unless they come to the decision that they must put aside their political differences, and there are many, and they must unite their resources into a common goal of increased military and increased economic power. Now, we're going to have to wait and see how that plays out, but somehow, some way, that's what we should expect to see. At some point in the future, expect an amazing turnaround in Europe that actually is going to result in miraculous prosperity quickly. Let me prove that. Revelation 18. Revelation 18, verse 3. This is yet to happen, and it's talking about the coming beast power. Revelation 18, verse 3, for all the nations, this is speaking of the rest of the nations of the earth, have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. The kings of the earth have committed fornication with her. They've jumped in bed with the beast power, the false prophet. And the merchants of the earth, all around the world, have become rich through the abundance of her luxury. So we believe that the coming last revival of the Roman Empire, with this combination of 10 kings that will come together to form a final, short-lived resurgence of the fourth of this historic fourth empire of Daniel 7, the last of the toes, of the last of the horns of Daniel 7. This coming European Union, with the blessings of the great Roman Church, will appear to be the ultimate solution to the world's problems. And they are going to perform miracles. It will be a miraculous rise to power. And it will be at the expense of the United States and Great Britain in particular, who are prophesied to implode. We hate to hear it. Europe will be there to pick up the pieces, and they will establish a much different new world order than has been anticipated by other world leaders. But this will be so impressive, what they've been able to do. Much of the world will desire to come into partnership, especially a trading partnership with this new power, because they really won't have any other option. We're going to note a description of this coming power. It's in Daniel 8. Daniel 8 and verse 23. Daniel 8, we have the time setting, verse 23, in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors have reached their fullness. This is sin. It's coming to, it's getting as bad as you can get, okay? Then a king shall arise. it describes the king, having fierce features, who understands sinister schemes. He's very deceptive. He's very sinister. Who's the power behind this? Who's that sound like? In verse 24, it tells us the answer. His power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. He's going to receive supernatural help from Satan the devil. He shall destroy fearfully, and he shall prosper and thrive, and he shall destroy the mighty. Who's the mighty? I believe a reference to the United States and the British Commonwealth. He shall destroy the mighty, look at this, and also the holy people, a reference to the coming tribulation, persecution of the saints. Verse 25, through his cunning. Notice these words, again, describing the power behind it. Through his cunning he shall cause deceit to prosper under his rule, and he shall exalt himself in his heart. Total pride. He shall destroy many in their prosperity. And he, this beast power, he shall even rise against the prince of princes, capital P. But he, the beast power, the false prophet, this great super leader that's coming, he shall be broken without human means. We'll get into some of this in the upcoming sermons. I think you know who that is. So for a very short time, the power this union of 10 kings has, it will seem miraculous, because it will be. But it will come crashing down as well. Christ, Jesus Christ, the Prince of Princes, he will intervene. Let's look at that, Revelation 18. Revelation 18, though it's talking about the destruction of what's going to be built, it shows what will be built that will be destroyed. And it's far richer than what the situation is right now. So Revelation 18, verse 11, when this happens, when the destruction of this happens, and we'll get into that again later, the merchants of the earth will weep and mourn over her, for no one buys their merchandise anymore. They can't. It's come to an end. And then it describes what that merchandise is that no longer is available. The merchandise of gold and silver, precious stones, pearls, fine linen, purple, silk, scarlet, every kind of citron wood, every kind of object of ivory, every kind of object of the most precious wood, of bronze, of iron and marble, of cinnamon, of incense, fragrance oil, frankincense, wine, oil, fine flour, wheat, cattle, sheep, horses, chariots. A long list of prosperous things, wondrous things. But look how it ends. And the bodies and souls of men, they don't care who they destroy. The fruit that your soul longed for has now gone from you. And all the things which are rich and splendid have gone from you, and you will find them no more. The merchants of these things who became rich by her, they'll stand at a distance for fear of her torment. What will that be? I suspect it will be nuclear in nature. They will be weeping and wailing and saying, "Alas, alas, that great city that was clothed in fine linen, in purple and scarlet, she was adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, for in 1 hour such great riches have come to nothing." How can that happen? It seems this beast power will become extremely powerful and wealthy very soon during the time of the great tribulation, but also will be suddenly destroyed by events following during a time period we refer to as the Day of the Lord, a one-year period of the intervention of God, the Day of the Lord. But even, and again we'll get into that, even as this new European superpower arises on the scene, where does our focus need to be? Hopefully we're looking at this from a place of protection. But our focus needs to be always on the Middle East, particularly Jerusalem. And don't turn to it, but Zechariah 12, verse 2. Zechariah 12, 2. I will make Jerusalem a cup of drunkenness to all the surrounding peoples. So much confusion, so much war, so much devastation, really. Major events are going to center in Jerusalem. The beast power will occupy Jerusalem by force. Who's the beast power? Europe. Who comes in after the attack of the king of the south? Europe, the king of the north. They overwhelm. They will occupy Jerusalem by force. Events will culminate there. And that will culminate eventually with the woes and the sounding of the seventh trumpet. In the meantime, looking before that time comes, we're going to see weapons of mass destruction prevalent and terrorism will increase. Weapons of mass destruction are prevalent. They are. Terrorism increases. It looks like it's going to. What does the Bible say will happen? Okay, the prophecy in Ezekiel chapter 12, verse 19. We'll read several passages here. Ezekiel 12, 19. Say to the people of the land, thus says the Lord God to the inhabitants of Jerusalem and to the land of Israel. Okay, you know, we're thinking Western nations as well, modern Israel as well. They shall eat their bread with anxiety. Do we not today? Drink their water with dread, so that her land may be emptied of all who are in it. That's the prophecy. Because of the violence of those who dwell in it. And then, this is what we can expect to happen as the tribulation gets underway. The cities that are inhabited shall be laid waste, and the land shall become desolate. The reason? Then you shall know that I am the Lord. Jeremiah 15, verse 7. Jeremiah 15, verse 7. I will winnow them with a winnowing fan in the gates of her land. So this is like throwing up the chaff, you know, the wheat, and to blow it out with a fan, and it scatters. And I will bereave them of children. I will destroy my people since they do not return from their ways. Their widows will be increased to me more than the sand of the sea. I will bring against them, against the mother of the young man, a plunderer at noonday. And I will cause anguish and terror to fall on them suddenly. Potential of such scenarios as that is already all around us. How soon will something happen? We don't know. We know our headlines are filled with news, warnings about terrorist groups trying to get their hands on nuclear material or some other weapons of mass destruction. I want to quote from FBI Director Christopher Wray. This was on NPR.org, dated October the 31st, almost a year ago. He said this. He was before Congress. He said this. The war between Israel and Hamas has led to a spike in threats against the United States. He's warning that we are in a dangerous period as various terrorist groups look to leverage the conflict, again, the conflict in the Middle East, for their own causes. We've seen that, haven't we? Since October 7th last year, we've seen what's happening on our college campuses. Today, there's fear of biological and chemical weapons coming to America. So far, the attacks have been thwarted. It takes one. They say, you know, we have to be right all the time. They have to only be right once. Even so, we can expect to continue to at least suspect and look for lone wolf attacks, attempting to strike fear and to panic into our population. That's the short-term goal, fear, panic. Such threats will continue to be a way of life in many parts of the world. We're not used to it. And as we've been warned, we should expect dramatic terrorist attacks to continue anytime, anywhere. A disruptive state-sponsored cyber attack on our critical infrastructure. Trucking is shut down. Oil pipeline is shut down. The supply chain is cut in half somewhere. We are in a very unstable world. And things could happen immediately. We saw things happen even this week. that we wondered, whoa, what's that? What's going to happen with that? Israel launched an attack on Hezbollah with the pager things and the walkie-talkies or whatever. And there's been, if you watch the news this week, there's been a lot of missile attacks back and forth. It's escalating. How far will it escalate? Will there be a major war? What will happen? What I'm saying is things can happen quicker than we might expect. We have to be ready. We need to be prepared. Not frightened by any of this. Another point. The pride and the power of the United States will continue to disappear. Speaking of ancient and modern Israel, again, primarily when I say modern Israel, U.S. and B.C., their military strength, God says, this is in Leviticus 26:18, I'm just going to read the one phrase. After all this, if you do not obey me, I will break the pride of your power. Leviticus 26:18. Those in the congregation here who are over 70 years old or so, or at least were in the church back then, they can remember a time when the United States was at the pinnacle of its post-World War II glory. We were on top of the world, militarily, headed toward being there financially. And we couldn't imagine that we would lose the pride of our power. And some of us remember Mr. Armstrong warning about that happening. I said, wait, that can't happen. Look how great we are. And then things did start to happen. To a degree, things began to change. Those of us who remember the Vietnam War era of the 60s. And things were a mess in the 1960s. And we thought, well, this must be it. The world's going to end in 1972 after all. Because look, world events are playing out just like they're prophesied. And they didn't. Just like this might not play out now. Maybe you little ones that are, you know, under 5-10 years old, maybe you'll be 80 years old hearing a sermon like this. Well, I remember when I was a little kid, we had a pastor, Mr. Kelly, used to, and it didn't happen. Don't know. We're not setting dates. But we better be ready. One day it will. We did see some recovery post-Vietnam. But then we had 9/11. We got tangled up in seemingly endless war. And yes, American prestige and power did again go on the decline. President Trump did take an unexpected, tough stance against American adversaries. During his term, he did beef up the strength and readiness of the military. He did take strong positions against the aggression of China, Russia, even visiting North Korea. Remember, he stepped across the line. For a while, the United States' reputation began to gain ground. But once again, we see things not so much. America not willing to stand by her allies, not coming to their aid. Again, I make reference to what happened in Afghanistan with the withdrawal there, the killing of the 13 soldiers. That was horrible. Today, commitments are not honored, alliances are betrayed, weaknesses is not only perceived, it's also noted and seen. So other nations think, wait a minute, we've got to do something of our own if they continue to see America taking a back seat in world affairs. Now, much is going to depend, I believe, on the outcome of what's coming up in November. We have to wait and see. But we heard even in the sermonette that it's all out of our hands. It's not something we're concerned with. God decides this, what course of action is going to happen in our countries and others. But one thing I do believe, the timing of these events that I'm speaking of, the decline of our nation, if we are to go into decline, it depends on God's timing. How much more work is there for us to do as a church in preaching the gospel to the world, preparing a people? Are we going to grow large like we were in the 1980s or greater? What's God's plan? We don't know. If it's his plan to get a much greater work out, we grow much larger, then the economy in the United States will have to be such that it can support that. And we have to have more peace in the world that supports that. We'll have to wait and see. It's God's timing. I'm just saying how things might play out if we're near the end. But as we're seeing another point, the United States and British Commonwealth nations will continue a moral decline into perversity. Things going on today that are considered normal that would not have been spoken about 60, 70 years ago. There were standards of behavior that were held to. You go to the grocery store, you wear a suit. You go on a trip, you wear a suit. That's just the way it was back in the day. When they were not upheld, those standards were not upheld, back in the day, people were embarrassed. They were ashamed to hear that talked about. And today, that's unheard of. There's no right or wrong. Unless you disagree with my belief, then you're wrong. The outlook is, do whatever you want to do. Nothing matters. And today, we have primetime TV that shows vulgar sexuality, deviancy. It's completely normal. And if you don't like that, you're intolerant. You're narrow-minded. We are in disbelief of our leaders demanding the schools promote and encourage transgender surgeries, the bathroom of your gender choice, and so on. And we hear that. How can that be? I believe we've arrived at the time prophesied in 2 Timothy chapter 3 in the last days. Perilous times shall come, for men shall be, and we are all of the above. We are seeing the mind of Satan the devil. Satan the devil is all about selfishness and pride and evil. Satan the devil is about the destruction of the family. The family is the backbone of any successful society. The family is ridiculed today. So expect moral depravity to continue to sink even deeper. Too many Americans have come to the place where they don't believe there's anything that's right or wrong. Do whatever you want as long as you don't hurt anyone. No moral compass. Because for millions of America, there is no God. There are no rules. And in some countries, particularly now we're looking at Canada, said that if you even speak of these things, especially from the pulpit, you can be imprisoned. Prophecytracker.org, January 25, 2022. Quote, Canada approved a conversion therapy ban that condemns Christian doctrine on the sinfulness of homosexuality and transgenderism as a myth. The bill, called C-4, passed unanimously by both the Senate and the House of Commons, threatens pastors with 5 years of prison time if they remain faithful to the gospel of Jesus Christ. And that could happen here. Is there anything else we should look for? We're going to get a little bit closer. Indications of the coming mark of the beast. We'll read about that in Revelation 13. So let's turn there. Revelation 13, verse 13. He performs great signs so that he even makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. This is the beast's power. Remember, we were talking about miracles? He deceives those who dwell on the earth by the signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast. The false prophet is able to do these signs in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth, make an image to the beast, that beast who was wounded by the sword and who lived. We'll get into that next time. He was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should speak and cause as many as who would not worship the image of the beast to die, to be killed. And he causes all, small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads, so that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Now that can get complicated. It's hard to understand what that is. Once again, I would refer you to Life, Hope, and Truth, where we read this explanation. Quote, the right hand, remember the mark in your hand or your head. So the right hand can represent our actions, our labor, our work. The forehead can symbolize the inner beliefs the intellect. What's in the mind? So the mark of the beast is related to what we believe in our mind and what we are doing with our hands. Compare it with Deuteronomy 6:8, where God commanded ancient Israel to bind the commandments. How? As a sign on your hand, as frontlets between your eyes, the hand, the mind. There is one commandment of God that is often closely connected to one's ability to do business and that identifies God's people. Do we know what that is? What commandment could that be? It's not obey your parents. It's not covet. Of God's Ten Commandments, it's the Sabbath commandment is the one most likely to affect one's ability to work. I can't work on the Sabbath. Then you don't work here. I have to take off for the feast. No, you don't. You can't work here. But I have to. You can't work here. I can't support my family. Okay, I guess I'll have to work on the Sabbath. Mark of the beast. Receiving the mark of the beast. I'm done with the quote. Receiving the mark of the beast shows your willingness to compromise God's law so that you are not labeled as being different, labeled as being rebellious against any authoritarian, tyrannical government. Once again, I believe we are being conditioned for this type of total government control. A couple of years ago, people were told to discriminate against those who might be unwilling to take the vaccine. Thankfully, that changed to a degree, but some lost their jobs over it. But that control is going to get much worse. There will be a time that if we are willing to compromise with God's law in order to succeed, in order to survive, we're told we will be marked with that mark of the beast, the power that is in authority. We've seen in our history that a spirit of compromise can even exist in the church of God. We think of 1990s. So look for more pressure to come on us to compromise God's law in the years ahead. It's going to be difficult. Look for the enforcement of a false religion with severe penalties for refusing to participate. If you don't do this, you can't work. If you don't keep Sunday, you can't work. If you Judaize and be like those hated Jews and worship on a Saturday Sabbath, you can't work here. Could there be, this is pure speculation, an unexpected lurching to the extreme right on the political spectrum, where Catholic and Protestant beliefs are strictly enforced in an effort to save this nation? Just a possibility. I have nothing to base that on except my own craziness, okay? But maybe we're looking for ways where the mark might be enforced. Just something I thought of. Let's move past that. Economic collapse likely to come. Economic collapse to come. Yes, things are looking pretty good. The stock market's up. I love the price of gold because I have some and I watch it going up and I say, oh boy, we just paid for the floor remodeled. Okay. The United States is now approximately $35 trillion in debt. I have heard rumors officials are going to push it to over $100 trillion. Just keep spending. But that is not sustainable. I remember saying, you know, $10 trillion, $1 trillion was not sustainable. So I want to try to simplify what the United States has done with their debt. So here we go. There's an economic lesson. So imagine taking out a credit card. Your credit card has a $10,000 limit. It's got a cap on it. Taking out the credit card. And it's, you know, low interest rate, 3% interest rate. So you promptly go out and you charge $10,000 worth of goods. The bill comes. But you only pay the interest because you can't afford to pay even the minimum payment on this credit card bill. So because of that, you're considered in default because you only paid the interest. And now your interest rate is no longer 3%, it's 25% or 30%. No problem. You simply take out another credit card that has another $10,000 cap. You use that money to pay the interest payment on the first credit card, plus you charge another $9,000 on your second credit card. But you can't afford to make the payments on the second credit card, so you only pay the interest. So you take out a third credit card to pay the interest on the second credit card, and you charge $9,000 on that one. You can't pay. So you take out a fourth. All along, you're spending $9,000 every month. So now, after four cards, you are over $40,000 in debt just on the principal, because interest has probably added another $40,000. Each one of the cards is now charging you about 25% interest. Meanwhile, all your income is coming from a part-time minimum wage job. Maybe you get $15 an hour. Your debt is now skyrocketing, and you have no hope of ever paying it off. Welcome to the United States economy. It can't keep going like that unless something happens, some sort of either a collapse or some restructuring, if we keep on spending like there's no tomorrow. I believe tomorrow is coming. And I believe we may be seeing the dawn of that new tomorrow on the horizon. I want us to note a warning from God that describes what he is going to do to modern Israel. Assuming the nations do not repent, let's go to Leviticus 26. I don't know my time. If I'm going over time once again, I only got one shot at this. I might go until maybe tomorrow afternoon, about 5 o'clock we would stop, you know, but a little bit before that. I'm not going to be a Paul and preach all night, even though it might seem like it. Leviticus 26, verse 14. If you do not obey me and do not observe all these commandments, this is dual. This was told to ancient Israel, but certainly it's told to our nations today. And if you despise my statutes, if your soul abhors my judgment, so that you do not perform all my commandments, but you break my covenant. So God gives a warning. I will do this to you. I will even appoint terror over you. Really? We've already talked about terrorism. Wasting disease and fever, epidemics, which shall consume the eyes and cause sorrow of the heart. You shall sow your seed in vain, for your enemies will eat it. I will set my face against you. You shall be defeated by your enemies. Those who hate you will reign over you. You will flee when no one pursues you. And after all this, if you still do not obey me, then I will punish you seven times more for your sin. I will break the pride of your power. I will make your heavens like iron, your earth like bronze. Seems like that's that way in Lawrenceburg, Indiana today. No rain. And your strength shall be spent in vain, for your land shall not yield its produce, nor shall the trees of the land yield their fruit. Then if you walk contrary to me and are not willing to obey me, I will bring on you seven times more plagues according to your sin. I will send wild beasts among you, which shall rob you of your children. They will destroy your livestock, make you few in number. Your highways will be desolate. And if by these things you are not reformed by me, but walk contrary to me, then I also will walk contrary to you, and I will punish you yet seven times more for your sin. That's a lot. Why are we so stubborn that we won't get it? But this basically brings us up to where we are today. We've seen many of these things happening. Question, are we literally about to see wild beast? I don't know. Maybe. Maybe it's some sort of imagery. I don't know. But something is coming. We're going to see a continuing progression from bad to worse that brings us up to the Great Tribulation, which will be the greatest time of suffering, of destruction, and death that the world will ever see. And that's described in the rest of the chapter. And we'll see that more in the next sermon. I'm not quite done. Just prior to that, let's notice one more very significant event that is going to take place. We talked about this earlier. Animal sacrifices will start in Jerusalem. This was in the teen Bible study. Animal sacrifices to start in Jerusalem and the setting up of the abomination of desolation. Okay, we talked about it. Fast-changing world events are going to embolden the Jews in Jerusalem. They are going to believe finally they are in a position that they have to, they must begin practicing the animal sacrifices. the red heifers and all that, and the instruments for the, it's all set, being prepared. Perhaps this will be shortly before the European beast power has overrun and conquered the Arab nations. I doubt if the beast power is going to allow sacrifices to take place. No, they will cut them off. But Israel will no longer see the Arabs as a threat. If they don't see the Arabs as a threat, oh, I can do the sacrifices from Life, Hope, and Truth. In reference to the end of this age, when he would return to the earth, a second time, Jesus said, Matthew 24, verse 15, when you see the abomination of desolation that was spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever reads this, let him understand. Then, it's time to leave. Then those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. So Daniel was told in a vision that the words he had been given were sealed until the time of the end. And that from the time that the daily sacrifice is taken away, that means it has to start, and the abomination is set up, there shall be, we talked about this in the Bible study as well, 1,290 days, 3.5 years. So the countdown of days is presumed, that's 1,290 days, is presumed to be until the seventh trumpet, until the return of Christ. So here we see, this is dual. The abomination of desolation happened once. You can read about it. So another fulfillment of the abomination of desolation is yet to occur. We should note that the preceding verse, which mentions the abomination of desolation being set up, also states the daily sacrifices must be taken away. The Jews are not offering any daily sacrifices now. They couldn't now. So they have to be reestablished. For sacrifices to be offered, a prerequisite, not necessarily a temple, there must be an altar constructed. What this end-time fulfillment of the abomination that makes desolate will be has not been revealed. But Daniel 12 says, the wise will understand when it's established. And we're not told how long the offerings will continue. A few days, a few weeks, but at some point they'll be stopped. And based on the historical pattern we've seen, something abominable will take place at that site. And we should recognize it for what it is. That's the end of the article. So again, since the beast power will have been successful in conquering the Arab nations who came against them, we believe that they, the beast power, will also take control of Jerusalem. Daniel 11, verse 41 says that the beast power will enter, we've read this earlier, enter into the glorious land, a reference to Israel and Jerusalem. Again, the exact timing of these events, we don't know. We're yet to find out. It could be close. When the sacrifices are stopped and the abomination of desolation is taking place, has been set up, then it will be time for us to expect a message from somebody. I don't know who, but someone's going to give us the message. It's time to go. I suspect it will be at a time when we say, oh, no, it's not. It doesn't look like it to me. It will be time to go. Daniel 12, verse 11. From the time the daily sacrifice is taken away and the abomination of desolation set up, there shall be 1,290 days. It indicates the church may have about 30 days to be gathered by whatever means God has planned. I don't think we're all getting on the jet planes. I don't think we're walking. And I'm sad to say, I don't think it's the Galt House in Louisville after all. So, some place that God makes available, we have, it looks like, about 30 days before being sealed and protected for the next 3.5 years. And that's my final point. The church is protected at the beginning of the Great Tribulation. We'll read that in Revelation 12. God's promise to take his church to a special place of safety and a special place of final preparation. Again, Revelation 3, the message to the church in Philadelphia, because you've persevered and not denied my name, I will keep you from the hour of trial. So here is the how this plays out. It's in symbolic language. The woman, the church, fled into the wilderness where she has a place prepared by God that they should feed her there 1,260 days, 3.5 years. Verse 13, as this is happening, the dragon saw that he had been cast to the earth. He persecuted the dragon, Satan, the devil. He persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child, Jesus Christ. So this is God's church. But the woman, the church, was given two wings of a great eagle that she might fly into the wilderness to her place. I don't know how that is, but we'll find out. Where she is nourished, taken care of for times and half a time, 3.5 years, from the presence of the serpent, the dragon, Satan the devil. He cannot touch the church there. But he will try before she gets there. The serpent spewed water out of his mouth like a flood. That's like an army, like a flood, after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away by the flood. It's going to seem, as we are going somewhere, it looks like it's going to seem like we're going to die. That we're about to be destroyed by some army or some force that's chasing us to keep us from going there. But miraculously, expect this, because you don't have to worry. The earth helped the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed up the flood, which the dragon had spewed out of its mouth. Symbolic language, yes, but it indicates the church is moving toward this special place, and Satan causes some force, I think perhaps military, to come against us to prevent us from entering that location. We have to remember, don't be afraid. Expect miraculous deliverance. It's going to come. Several places that indicate the church will be taken to a place of safety. For your reference, here's two. They are also in the Psalm. Psalm 27, verse 5. For in the time of trouble, he shall hide me in his pavilion. In the secret place of his tabernacle, he shall hide me. He shall set me high upon a rock. Psalm 31, 20. You shall hide them in the secret place of your presence from the plots of men. You shall keep them secretly in a pavilion, in a shelter. Again, an important thing for us to remember, we should not have, I want to get to the place of safety, as your goal. Your responsibility is to prepare spiritually. That's all that matters. We don't prepare physically to save our life in this place of protection. Whoever seeks to save his life will lose it. But those who are willing to lose their lives for Jesus Christ will find it. I hope what you're seeing is that the times we are living in potentially are very, very dangerous. Do not be afraid. Trust God. With that, we'll end part two of our series of sermons on prophecy. Next time, we're going to take a closer look at understanding the statue, the symbolic beast, the horns, the scarlet woman, and what it will be like during the Great Tribulation.
Brethren, we've come to the end of this service today.